Imagine a world where the concept of pain and suffering no longer exist. A world where pleasure reigns supreme above all other sensations. Some may consider it a brave new world. Welcome back to the Wacky Woohoo Reviews, and today I will examine THE original dystopia, masterfully crafted by the brilliant author Aldous Huxley, which was written over 80 years ago, during a time where the mere concept of dystopia was unappreciated, as opposed to now, where dystopian fiction is one of our most popular fiction genres. The story of Brave New World begins when we are introduced to the process of creating human life in the future, where every single human is now artificially created in vats. And through this process, we meet our, well, substitute main character for the time being, a man named Bernard Marx, who serves as our guide into the rather insane world of the future. So, Bernard is a, well, he's a societal outcast. And he is also an attention seeker, two things that don't mesh well together. So he makes a rather important discovery down in New Mexico, far from his home in London, where he finds one of the only fully intelligent and literate non-created humans left in the world. And seeing this as his ticket to fame, he decides to bring this human back with him to the Society of Brave New World. Well, this works until it doesn't, because the boy he brought back with him, who's named John, absolutely hated everything that had to do with the Society of Brave New World. He hated the idea that anybody could basically shirk their responsibilities and cast away all notions of pain for pleasure. And this culminated in him starting a riot in order to try and wake the people up, in a futile effort, all the same. This resulted in him, and by extension Bernard, getting dragged away and brought to a man called the World Controller, where he informed John about everything about the Society of Brave New World, including its creation and how society can never ever go back to the way it was before, because if they did, the world would be destroyed. So in hearing this, John decides that he wants none of it, and he goes to live in exile, which, once again, works until it doesn't, because people from the city of London, which is where pretty much almost the entirety of the story takes place, pursue him there, and they decide that they want to watch him for entertainment. And this escalates to the point where John has to physically chase people away from him. But this eventually drives John to just disappear altogether, leaving the face of the earth and ending the book on a cliffhanger where we don't know how John could have gotten away or possibly died. Alrighty, so we're getting into the first segment of the podcast, and I would like to introduce to my guest speaker / person I bullied into helping me, Tony.
What's going on, everyone? I'm here to help Jacob Just put a few comments here and there about his book. So here we go.
Yep. So our first category for today is about the character of John in the book. And I found him as the most compelling character in the book, as he is basically a man thrust into a futuristic society and basically told that this is how things are. What do you think? And compared to how he lived before, he thought that the little tribe that he lived in was pretty much his entire world, and that he was enclosed in there because of something else that he needed to be kept safe from. But John's overall story, it reminded me of a similar story I'd heard from one of my favorite musicians called King Diamond, and he's a metal artist. He basically makes these albums which are stories in and of themselves. Each song tells a different part of the story, and he reminds me of the character of the Traveler in one of his albums called The House of God. And in that album, the Traveler finds the House of God, which was a church built to serve every god at will. He goes into the catacombs of the church, and he finds the body of Jesus Christ himself, still alive and mummified. And he disturbs these entities, which I guess in a way relate to the people controlling the world in the book, that are behind the very ideas of good and evil. But they're more than that altogether. Like, you see what I mean about the correlation here?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of
you never know what's really behind, you know, the things you see, the people you see every day, you never know who's really in control, like the Jesus resting in the catacombs, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, he wasn't just resting there. He was, in the story, he was chained there so that he would never walk the earth again by those entities. It's never explicitly told why he was, but they seemed to believe that the world would never, ever be the same if he were to walk free again. And one thing, another very striking similarity I found between these two stories is in how they end. Because in Brave New World, John just disappears off the face of the earth. We don't see what happens to him. We were never told what happens to him. It's still a mystery to this day. But in the House of God, the Traveler learns of the truth behind everything. Everything. And he learns that everything that he knew was fake. And he decides that he can't live in this world anymore. So he chooses death over the entities. And he hangs himself from the Tower of Hell in the House of God. They end in a similar way, except we're explicitly told what happens to the Traveler. Whereas John, most people do believe that he did kill himself. And it kind of aligns with how the story goes up until the end. But I don't think he did. I feel like that would be something really important to show in the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, just on top of my head again, really just the argument of real and fake, what is the world that we are living in right now? The Matrix, really good trilogy, I guess, but really, in the end, I mean, Neo did end up saving the world, but he didn't get the whole picture at first as well. He was played. Played by the Oracle. And I don't know, and we never knew what happened to him as well. That's some striking similarity right there. Is he dead?
Yeah.
Is he
in a coma? It kind of ended on a cliffhanger, because we never really explicitly saw Neo die either. That's a fair point. We just kind of saw him collapse, and he was dragged away by the machines.
Yeah.
They never said he died. kind of weird how you can find how this one book's ending, it just parallels so many other story endings.
Yeah, just links to the whole world. So
yeah, I think that'll wrap up this segment. It's been 13 minutes.
13 minutes.
Yeah, pretty good. That's good enough. So, we arrive at our second segment for today. And I don't know what I'm going to call this one. We're just going to leave it at segment two for now.
Segment two, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, so I was originally going to just compare and contrast how different people in the book, like John and, say, the secondary main character, Bernard Marx, are. And, well, they are obviously different from a biological standpoint, but I feel like a better way to do this would be to explain how they're created first. So that's what I'm gonna do. So, there's really no long or short way to explain this. It's quite as simple as people are grown and developed in these places called hatcheries. Yeah, the name speaks for itself. They kind of hatch out of these giant vats. Like, they're grown with some kind of blood surrogate.
Wow, that sounds like... That's like, you know, humans degrading to, like, insects, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're hatching themselves out of, like, these hatcheries, so...
Yeah, they go through an entire process called decantation, which I'm pretty sure is either their inception or their, like, coming out of the vat, you know? And, notable thing to mention is Bernard Marx, the secondary main character, had an accident with his whole process of decantation. He came out, his growth was stunted because somehow they mixed alcohol with his blood surrogate.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I don't know the science behind that, and I don't think it works that way, but hey, book logic, you can't argue with it, you know?
I mean, the man's in 1920s and writing about 1320s, so. No, no, I mean, like...
20, 30,
so...
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, so, after they're basically born and created and hatched, I guess, they go through from, I want to say, childhood to adolescence. So, like, maybe from the very moment they're hatched to probably, I'd say the cutoff point is where... about how old we are now, really.
Yeah.
They're trained and conditioned in very extravagant ways, actually. And this conditioning has a real-world basis in the research of a man named Pavlov. Now, he discovered that dogs can be conditioned to respond to certain stimulus in their environment, and he conducted his experiment around feeding the dog. So he would, originally he opened the door, gave it food, and then left, and then come back the next time it needed to be fed, and...
So would just show up at the door?
Yeah, and the dog was already, like, salivating, like it was anticipating the food. So then he stopped opening the door and he started ringing a bell. Then he opened the door and he repeated that process until just ringing the bell was enough to get the dog excited. And then to prove that it worked indefinitely, pretty much, he would ring the bell and he would not give the dog food to see what would happen. And the dog still got excited regardless because he thought that the bell would signify that he's getting food. It's a similar kind of process to that, really, but except
we're doing it at doing it.
They're doing it to humans, and with I learned another thing in psychology is that you can't reverse this kind of conditioned learning on a human. You can't. You can do it to them, but you can. You can't like undo it. There was an experiment done by a John Watson on a baby. And the experiment was to teach the boy to be afraid of certain animals. So first few times they'd go around, he'd play with the animals because he's a baby and he's curious. Then they start, whenever he would interact with a baby after that, they would basically take a steel bar and a hammer and he would make this loud noise that scared the baby. And they did that enough to the point where they stopped doing that, and the baby was perpetually afraid of animals. Permanently. But the conditioning process for humans in the book, though, was that they used these kind of subliminal type of messages while they were sleeping. And that would and it somehow would condition them to think that way or do these certain things when they wake up. And it did, by all accounts, work. I don't remember the exact science behind it, but I know that most of their methods were basically, they took it from Pavlov. And if it's actually kind of interesting because the experiments of Pavlov happened maybe 50 or so years before this book was made, so it would have been a relatively interesting or popular topic around his time when he was born.
Yeah.
Join us next time for the next segment. Alrighty, it's time for that third category. And hopefully not as long as the second one. Because the second one was 15 minutes.
I don't know. I kind of get the feeling that we're going to hit this one off even more. So
maybe. Alright, in this category, we're gonna be talking about how in a Brave New World, every single piece of media that could be deemed dangerous, as in against what they want, what the people in control want you to think, are outlawed. And it's even simple things such as like Shakespeare. In the book, they outright say that the works of Shakespeare are outlawed because they're irrelevant now. Because we have modern works of Shakespeare.
Modern works of Shakespeare, that's...
They can be adapted into new settings, but they really can't because you've taken away the original idea of it. Stories like Othello, Romeo and Juliet, even Macbeth are completely outlawed to be supposedly redone into a way that benefits their society. You know? No negativity. None of that. It removes all the things that make actual good Shakespeare stories good.
I mean, Shakespeare is just kind of spreading the idea of true love, Romeo and Juliet, and, you know, just... Like, Macbeth is more like, I guess, fighting for yourself, you know, just... that
your ambition can have its own consequences.
Like, I guess in the new world, you're just not allowed to have these things. You are not even, you know, supposed to think about these things.
No, I just want you to think about what you do, how you do it, and how you can do it better, and if you get stuck on the details too much, you can just pop a drug and forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we were talking about how this would tie into my country. I guess it was, like, you know, like, a lot of works, pieces of Western literature are getting translated and, you know, cut it into a shape that the government would want.
Yeah,
so,
that supports their own views.
Yeah, I mean, but it takes away the whole point. So, like, and...
You know, the point of stories like this one are to, they're to warn us of a possible future should us as humans stray too far, you know? And I feel like the stuff that governments do now, like cutting certain books
censoring.
And yeah, censoring
even just media, even like you mentioned earlier, media, books, whatever it is, like information in general is just getting limited. You know, we have these secret agencies, like at least in the North America, we know there's like.
Yeah, we know that there's the CIA, there's the FBI, there's...
2 to 3 secret agencies that is in work. Like, in a lot of the other countries, we don't, like, you know, they're just underground. Like, underground, like, almost, like, mafia, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Did you know that at one point, in either... in the 80s and leading into the 90s, that the mafia down in Russia pretty much controlled the entire country.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That would be wild.
All of Russia during that time period was controlled by the mob.
No wonder why we would have, like, when we want to name a mob, like a mob, we would say... Russian, you know, Italian.
Russian gangsters, Russian Italian gangsters.
Okay, so that's where that came from, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, I mean, at least, like, in a lot of medias we see today, I don't know how true is that going to be in, you know, actual work, but at least, like, a lot of these North America agencies, they still have a code, like, but these mafias, these underground... cabals, they don't, like, no. they can just take orders and operate however they want.
Yeah, because they've got the money, they've got the power to do what they want to do.
So, yeah, I mean, is there something similar in the book, I would imagine? Like, just repressing the voice?
Repressing any voice of freedom, yeah, really, yeah. Probably a good time to end this category at, and, well, what else can I say, but thank you, Tony, for being my guest speaker. You really helped save my whole podcast.
I mean, it's been a hell of a ride doing this. Like, it's really a lot more interesting than I thought, that I would just talk by myself than to another person, and really, like, I think I would personally like this book as well, because it really links in with my background. Like, a lot of the, you know, the real versus fake is another topic that I really enjoy. So, yeah. Enjoyed it. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Well, feel now this is a great segue into the outro. We'll see you there. All right, well... I guess this wraps up the entire podcast. Thanks, anybody, for listening. I would like to give a special thanks to the people who helped me make my podcast, such as Tony, who stuck around and helped me with my 3 categories in, well, making the podcast what it is. I feel like if I did the podcast without Tony, it would have been a completely different project. And I gotta thank my other friend Avery Thomas for helping me come up with the idea for the name of my podcast, The Wacky Woohoo Reviews. So thank you to the both of you. And overall, I would say that Brave New World is a really, really good book, but you will undoubtedly be confused your first time reading it, because there is a lot to take in with it, but it's a book I can't recommend enough. It has a lot going for it, especially since it's like a piece of history itself. It is a piece of history itself. It was made in the 1930s, and its ideas are still relevant to this day, over 80 years later, almost 90 now. That's kind of crazy, well, astounding, really. Other than what I've said about the book and what I've compared it to and how I feel about it, I recommend checking it out for yourself. It's not a long book, but it'll keep you busy trying to decipher all the different things within it, some of the deeper meanings and such. And yeah, it's one of the most unique books I've ever had the pleasure of reading. And if I could go in with a unique experience again, I 100% would. That being said, this all good things must come to an end, and this podcast is one of them. So, this has been a wacky woohoo review of Brave New World, written by Aldous Huxley. Have a good day, everybody, and remember, it's always pizza time.